Judge Stephen Boyce joins us. And Judge Boyce, welcome. It's an honor to have you, no pun intended, it's an honor to have you in the studio this morning.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for letting me come on your show for a minute. I am a listener of the show when I drive to Driggs very frequently.
Oh, good.
99.9 is the signal that gets you all the way past Green Canyon and out to Driggs that I can get clearly on the radio. So I just part of my morning routine driving out to work.
Well, we're flattered. That's great. We're glad you are listening. That's good. Well, let's talk about your re-election. You're being challenged. A lot of times judges go unchallenged. But Randy Neal, the Bonneville County prosecutor, announced a campaign against you. And so here we are in the midst of a political campaign. And so we have him on scheduled for later this week. And so we're glad to have you on this morning. And maybe, I guess, for those who don't know you very well, give us just a minute about your background.
Okay. I grew up here in Idaho Falls, went to Falls Valley Elementary School, first grade, went to Bonneville High School. My wife's went to Skyline High School, and our kids went to IF. So we have a lot of deep roots in Idaho Falls. I worked farming every summer growing up, and then worked landscaping all through college. So I developed good work ethic doing those hard jobs, getting through school. I came back to Idaho Falls after I was done with law school at the University of Idaho. Worked in the Bonneville County Prosecutor's Office for about 7 years. Worked in private practice for about 21 total years. Between the prosecutor time and my private practice, worked for 21 years before being appointed as a magistrate judge by the Magistrate Commission in 2017. And then in 2019, Justice Greg Mueller in Madison County was appointed to the Idaho Supreme Court, and that created a vacancy in Madison County. So we had that opening. I applied for that position, and out of 12 really good candidates, I was fortunate to be appointed by Governor Little to be the district judge for Madison County, and I also preside over Fremont and Teton counties.
Okay, so let's talk about your judicial philosophy. I know one of the things, the challenge I think for all three of us in this room is we want to ask you about some of the cases that you presided over. Obviously, the Lori Vallow-Daybell case was probably the most high-profile case you've ever done and probably ever will do. We also oversaw the Chad Daybell trial, and there have been others as well. But we know we can't really ask you a lot of specifics about especially the legalities of that. But we do want to, I guess, ask you about your judicial philosophy and on the bench, kind of what governs you internally when you're examining the future of an accused criminal.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, in those cases, yeah, I can't talk about any specifics. The judicial canons prevent judges from discussing particular cases, and really critically on both of those cases, the trials are done, but they continue on as these types of cases do. So I still do preside over those matters in some aspects, and so I can't discuss any of the particulars of those. Other than I can say, obviously, I'm experienced as a trial judge, having gone through those two very lengthy and intense trials over the last several years. In terms of my judicial philosophy, I always just look back to the appointment of a judge or the swearing in or the oath that a judge takes, and that oath is to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Idaho and to apply the laws fairly and equitably to everyone that's in court, whether it's a civil or a criminal case. And a lot of times people only associate judges with doing criminal cases because they generally make the news more. But the civil cases are very intensive. They're difficult and they take a lot of our time. And so we also have to apply that same judicial philosophy to civil litigants that come in the court. But my philosophy is to support the law, to uphold the law, to apply the law, and to do what I think the community expects of a judge in each one of my cases. So I take a lot of time and I take a lot of preparation in looking through cases, things like criminal sentencings. I always look at my calendar way in advance and prepare for those as much as possible so I can get all the facts I need and try to apply the law the best I can every day.
Yeah.
As a judge, would you explain to the listeners how plea deals work? And when a plea deal occurs between the prosecution and the defense, and then it's presented to you, how do you handle those? And what is the expectation of the judge from that point forward?
Okay. Yeah. When criminal cases are charged, they generally are resolved by plea agreement. I would say the vast majority of them are. And there are reasons for that. First of all, those plea agreements are authorized by criminal rule. Second, just in terms of the volume of cases we have, on any given Monday, I might have 30 criminal cases on my calendar in Madison County. And if you looked at each of those going to trial, two-day trial minimum for each case, you would have 60 days of trial there. And that would equate to probably 3 months of trial. So there's a volume. And, so it starts to become difficult because you do have to efficiently move through the cases so that all the cases can be resolved. And criminal cases have to be resolved within certain time frames. Plea agreements are, I think there's a public misunderstanding maybe that courts and judges are involved in plea agreements. Plea agreements are 100% the responsibility of prosecutors and the defense attorneys who represent defendants can be involved in negotiating the terms. But prosecutors, they charge cases. Prosecutors are in charge of charging decisions as well as making any kind of plea agreement. And the courts have no involvement in that whatsoever. So those terms are negotiated before they ever get to the court. And then the court, upon receiving a plea agreement, can consider the terms, and in certain, I would say rare exceptions, a judge can decide that a plea agreement is inequitable or isn't following the law correctly, and then a judge can reject a plea agreement.
What are those unique situations? Because, you say they are quite rare. What are the circumstances around a judge that would say, we're not doing this plea agreement?
Usually, in my mind, it indicates there's a problem with the state's evidence because prosecutors have all the tools and resources to go to trial, to have witnesses, to get their officers there, to subpoena people, and put a case on. And if they've really got evidence that someone's guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, then a case should go to trial if someone's not willing to plead guilty to their offense. But occasionally, good prosecutors will come to me sometimes and we'll have a sidebar with defense counsel because this all has to be fair on both sides. But they'll state reasons why they think their case might be problematic for trial.
Yeah.
You might have witnesses or victims who have changed their story, and so they may not have the credibility, and a prosecutor might be worried that there might be an acquittal at trial, and so they think that some conviction's better than acquittal. You might have uncooperative people involved in the case in terms of witnesses, and so sometimes it's just sort of a bargaining that takes place between the defense and the state. But if the state has a good, solid case, then they should, draw their line and say this is what someone needs to plead to or take the case to trial.
So are there situations then, as a sitting judge, where you look at the nature of a crime, you may not have the option to apply the punishment that you would think would fit the crime because of the plea agreement? Is that right?
That can happen, yeah. And it is rare, so the parties can enter into what's called a binding plea agreement, and I generally discourage those, and the attorneys that practice before me know that I'm not usually willing to accept those. They'll come to me oftentimes before they try to enter into a binding plea agreement and ask me if I would even consider it in the case, and the general response is no. But sometimes they do have certain reasons why it does make more sense in a certain case, and then I will agree with a binding plea agreement. But they're rare, but when that happens, it does take the discretion away from the judge. So the judge is not able to follow fully your own discretion in sentencing. You're bound to follow the terms of what were made by the prosecution and the defense.
Yeah.
All right. You're basically applying for a job in front of the voters. So if this was a job interview, what characteristics does Judge Boyce have that are good for the voters of your area and good to keep you on the bench?
Well, I think I come with a lot of experience. I have been practicing law since 1996. I've spent my whole career here in Southeast Idaho practicing. I'm currently the administrative district judge over the entire judicial 7th district of 10 counties, so I have a lot of responsibilities there. I'm the chair of the magistrate commission, which selects our magistrates. Pardon me. Excuse me. We just recently selected new magistrates, and for people that are really interested in the courts, I'll just note we have new judges going on the bench. Trent Belknap on Thursday, tomorrow in Jefferson County, and then on Friday we have a new judge, Jason Spillman, in Teton County, and those are open to the public. If you want to go meet a new judge and see who's going to be presiding in those counties, those things are happening Thursday and Friday. But I preside over that commission. I am an elected judge. There's been some talk that judges that are appointed are not elected. I was elected in 2022 after my appointment in 2019. I just didn't have anyone run against me, but we do stand for election every 4 years. And so I went through that appointment process, which is a very rigorous process. The commission is represented by citizens as well as attorneys and judges that select judges, and then ultimately the governor makes that appointment. I would say that in a recent survey, out of all the district judges that are running in contested elections this year, the Idaho State Bar published the results, and I had not only the most people respond, but I did have the highest scores of all the candidates right now. So I do have strong support of the bar, and I will say a little secret. It's you can't always get lawyers to agree on everything, so having members of the bar all behind you doesn't mean they are all behind you, but you know, you make people mad in every case with your rulings and decisions. But I think those scores reflect my dedication and commitment and work ethic. And I think I do have at least the respect of the attorneys, even if they may disagree with the decisions I make a lot.
All right. Our guest this morning, Judge Stephen. Oh, I do have one really quick question for you. When you look at the legislature, sometimes they take up judicial issues. I think judicial pay was one they took up the last couple of years. Sometimes they look at that mandatory minimums for different crimes. Is there anything that you'd like to see legislatively happen when it comes to criminal penalties or judicial reform?
You know, we don't have a lot of crimes with mandatory minimum penalties. And yeah. I think they could be considered in more instances. Those do take discretion away from judges, but I find it interesting that in a charge, for example, a charge of rape does not have a mandatory minimum charge, mm-hmm. but a charge of selling drugs does. So they've gone there with certain offenses, and it's mostly all drug-related. But in a lot of the other offenses that the public is really concerned about and that victims need to be heard on and victims need to be supported on, we don't have those mandatory minimums, which really creates a lot of uncertainty about how cases are going to go. And I think it's very stressful and difficult for victims that are facing the prospect of having to go through a trial and not knowing what would even happen to a perpetrator if they're convicted.
All right, Judge Stephen Boyce. His website is reelectjudgeboyce.com. We appreciate you coming in, and we'll be watching this election.
Well, thank you, Neil and Julie, both. I appreciate meeting you here. I've listened to you on the radio quite a bit, so it's a pleasure getting to know you here in the studio today.
Yeah, well, thank you. All right, it's 7:49 on News Talk 107.9.